Welcome to the Mattcast. In our attempt to bring the church world and the art world a little bit closer together, my name is Matt Anderson. Glad you can join us today. My guest today, yes, I have a guest. He is a musician. He's a worship leader. He's a songwriter, which we'll be dealing a lot with today. He's a producer. He's a pastor. He's an author. He's a raconteur and man about town, as they used to say in the old game shows. But he does it all. He does it all in the creative world. He is also married with five kids, and I am absolutely exhausted after reading that biography. But
I'm exhausted after hearing
it. He is also one of my dear friends, Jordan Beal. Welcome to the Mattcast.
Hello, everybody. I'm so glad to be here, Matt.
Hey, thanks so much for doing this. What we're going to do today is I want to talk about, because you're a very gifted songwriter, and it has been something that, even in the midst of your spiritual leadership changes in your life, this is something you continue to do. And it'd be very easy for you to kind of abandon this because you have lots of weighty responsibilities as husband, father, pastor. Those things alone are humongous. So that's a big reason why I wanted to talk to you and just your proficiency in it. So, and it's been something I've been able to sort of experience firsthand. But let's start. Just give me some musical background here for your life and kind of how music came into play for you.
Yeah, how music came into play. I was about 11 years old when my brother-in-law, Jimmy, gave me my first guitar. In fact, I remember when I opened the studio, I had this big grand opening party and definitely shed a little single tear because I had him there and was thanking him for investing in my life. And then just kind of taught myself some guitar from 11 to 13-ish. I got lessons one summer from a guy in town. And then when I was about, I want to say 17, yeah, because it was the year right before I graduated, 17, my parents gave me a piano. And then just picked that up. And so that's kind of my music background. When I suddenly realized I wanted to produce music and write music, well, I'd already been writing as like a teenager and experimenting a little bit, but when I discovered like, okay, I have got to do this, you know, a couple of days a week, was in Bible college. The music director of the school wanted to do an album for all of the Bible college. And so he had every single student in the music department write a song. So there was about 200, if I remember, 220, somewhere in there, kids each writing a song. And he had just heard one of my songs at a rehearsal. And so he put me as like co-producer guy in charge. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't know what I'm doing. But his name was Tony Hooper. And I'm like forever indebted to him because he really believed in me and was so encouraging. So he had me sit down with every single student, for a series of months and basically just find the gold nuggets and pick the best 12 songs and then finish writing them if they needed finished writing. And then when I saw all the parts come together in the studio, I mean, I was like, I still remember that feeling. I mean, it was like coming down the top of the highest roller coaster, you know, all these ideas that were in my head and written down on paper, I could actually hear with my ears, and it was just mind blowing. And I'm like, I got to do this.
And we should also say we have another special guest joining us here, and this is your youngest, right? This is
I'm on dad duty because the coronavirus. My wife is a nurse, so she cannot take off work.
Right.
So childcare is falling on me today. So I've got a little guy named Lucas with me today.
Isn't it nice to know that you're not essential as a pastor? Isn't it just?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
We've kind of known it for years, haven't we?
And appreciate that, Matt. You know, you always know how to like make me feel better about myself.
I'm so affirming. Now you actually won a national songwriting competition, didn't you?
Yeah, I was in, this is soon after graduation. I had submitted, I think I was about 19. I was in Chicago, and I was right about to go to Bible college and submitted to this, I can't remember what they called it, National Songwriter Competition, something simple like that. And I about fell over when I won. And that's really when I realized, I remember that moment because I was like, okay, Tony believes in me. And this contest went well. Maybe I should do this. Maybe I should pursue this.
Did you, and I assume, and I may be wrong in assuming, did you begin with writing worship songs and basically Christian material?
No, you're right in assuming that. I remember, I'm laughing because when you say started, my brain instantly went to, I was about 14. And I remember actually the first song I wrote, it was called Break My Legs. And you know, it's funny?
Was it like,
you
know, a mafia tribute? Is that
No. Here's what's funny. And the only reason it even comes to my mind is because with this extra time, because of the stupid coronavirus, I actually was cleaning out a storage closet, right? And I come across this shoebox and it's all my songs as a kid.
Wow.
So I flip and throw them and I get all the way to the bottom, and I see Break My Legs. And here it's pencil, right? And I'm like,
right.
I'm like, holy crap, this had great theology. It was literally like, it was basically the hymn that's like, you know, prone to wonder, Lord, I feel it, prone to leave the God I
right.
love. That concept. So okay. It was like this. It was like, break my legs so I won't run away. Break my legs. You know, something, something, something. Basically, keep me close to your heart was part of the chorus. And it was interesting. I was like, dang, break my legs. A little creepy.
Yeah.
But some it good could, theology in there.
Yeah, it could lead to some interesting altar calls.
Right.
But I love it. That's great. I'm so glad you kept that. I love that stuff. That's because you do.
I honestly could not believe that I found it. I was floored.
And it gives you an appreciation, you know, for the arc of where you've been as an artist. And
definitely.
Yeah, I don't even think you look at those things with shame. You're like, oh my, you just, there's almost kind of an admiration of, oh man, that's, you know.
Totally. Yeah. Like I laugh about the things that are like, okay, that's not a hook. That's just repeated and annoying. Right. If I see like the same things 8 times,
right.
But, and then I look at some, like I said, and I'm like, dang, you know, I was flipping through those papers and I was like, that one wasn't bad. I need to revisit that one, you know? And like right. most songwriters, you know, half of them are half done. You know, there's like a chorus here. There's a verse there.
Yeah.
There's a one line of a bridge there on another sheet of paper. It's just crazy.
Now what genres of music now? Cause obviously you have definitely expanded, as far as the kind of music you write, what genres, do you create, and is there one that's in particular easier or harder for you?
Definitely. So two genres are come very natural to me because the guitar parts and the vibe are kind of blend in. So that singer-songwriter, almost country pop, right? Pop rock. So that kind of Keith Urban meets Matt Mayer.
Okay.
Chris Tomlin has a lot of that sound. Just that comes very natural to me. So if I'm writing a song for Taxi or for a singer-songwriter artist like Joshua Smith or Carly Clark, any of these young guys on the Cellar Records, when it's singer-songwriter, that those parts come extra easy because that's just, I love that vibe. I stinking love that sound. Okay. Just a great telly and a great guitar, a great tube amp, and I just love that. That comes easiest.
And what's harder? Because I know you've expanded into many different places musically.
Yeah. Jazz I've experimented with the last couple of years. And it's weird because sometimes it comes natural if I just kind of stay in my lane and, you know, pick a few minor seventh chords and just improvise. But I've definitely noticed, like, it's not like worship music or rock or indie rock where I'm keeping my first and second take. You know, a lot of times with these jazz songs, it's my 12th take or my 20th or 25th take because some of those scales are just really funky and I don't play it often, but when I just love it though. So, it's been fun to experiment with that the last year or so.
I love it. Just your willingness to do that. Is it just the challenge of it? Just saying, I haven't done this yet.
Definitely that's part of it. I think the other part of it is I just have always loved that sound. I mean, and you can hear the influences, even an artist, you know, you listen to John Mayer, even though he's clearly, you know, this pop guy, you can hear the jazz and the blues rock vibe in so much influences and so much of his music. And, I just love that genre. So I started making some music. It was so different than my quote Jordan Beal worship music. So I just released it under a new name called Sound Diffusion, where it's like R&B beats with jazz parts.
Right.
And it came together neat, but I definitely want to keep working at it because I know it can get better.
Well, I know this podcast is very thankful that you have, because you're kind of the supplier of our theme and interlude music. So I'm already hearing from listeners who are really enjoying the music. So it's great. That way, if I totally stink, I've got the music there to save me. So
no, I stink and love this podcast.
Let's get into the process for you in songwriting. How does it typically begin for you? Does it begin with a hook, or does it begin with something external? Somebody else says, hey, I want a song about this.
It always begins with a hook. The only time it doesn't begin with a hook is when the songwriter's coming to me and I'm to produce them. And I've noticed it's the one thing I contribute the most to other people's songs, which is funny because then it becomes their title. But so many artists come to me and they really do have a great song, but nothing they're singing in the shower the next day.
Okay.
So that's the hook, is, you know, those 3 to 7 or 8 words that are super catchy and repeated and kind of sum up the whole song. Like this is what this guy's feeling, or this is what this girl's feeling, you know, in one line. So the hook is usually where it starts for me. Although there are times when I know I want to write a song about such and such. So like, I remember the song Love Is Coming, which ended up being one of our top selling songs. I didn't sit down because I had a hook. I sat down because as a worship leader, I was struggling finding a song that just told like the whole gospel. Mm. And like as much theology as I can in 8 lines of music, and an excitement for the fact that this Jesus that came to save us is coming back to take us to the heaven he made for us. Like, I could not find a song that said all of that. So that was my goal in creating Love Is Coming. I sat down with a message in mind, but not a hook.
So with the hook that initially comes to mind, is it lyrical or musical? Give me percentage-wise.
Yeah, it's about 90% of the time it comes up all at once.
Okay.
And then about 10% of the time it's just a melodic line, just musical.
Okay.
So last night Danielle and I were writing a song from Psalm 91, and I was really extra excited about that because she hadn't, you know, just with life of 5 kids and pastoring, like you said earlier, you know, we haven't got to sit down and just write a song in months as far as us two together. So I was really pumped that we got the kids to bed early and started writing this song. And we were basically just using the scripture, of course, that's why we called it Psalm 91. But then we wanted to say, like, you still got to sum up some things in a nice little, you know, catchy way. So it ended up being, you know, you are my God, in you I will trust. So that's how each line of the chorus ends, you know, in you I will trust. So that becomes kind of a subtitle.
Okay. And yeah, Psalm 91 is becoming everyone's favorite psalm here the last couple of weeks.
I know. I think it's so cool because Danielle tells me this. We get the kids in bed. She's like, I started writing a song about Psalm 91. And I said, babe, I just read that scripture on Facebook Live at our service, online service on Sunday. And it's like, it just, I don't know why, it just seemed extra powerful. I don't know if it's just a word for like Christians at large, the church at large right now, that, you know, God can be trusted and we can believe him to keep us safe. And, you know,
Right, that he's our shelter. It's not, you know, it's not our financial means, and it's not, you know, all the things that we love to lean on that are inappropriate.
That's right.
I don't know if I've ever met someone who loves to collaborate more than you do.
Oh, I love to collaborate. It's my favorite.
I mean, it's your life, dude. And just in every, here's how I experienced that to the listeners here. I want to say 12, 13 years ago. That's when I was really just getting to know you on a personal level. And I had come to your house and I had stayed the night, and I woke up the next morning and I think even before breakfast was on the agenda, you were saying, Matt, come in here, come into my studio. Let's write a song.
Yeah.
And I'm like, good morning, Jordan.
Yeah, you know, dude, if I have a song idea, it's like everything else is gone. Like, cancel all plans. We're writing this right now.
And you did. I think you had a germ of a song. And then I think obviously you wanted my help lyrically, musically. I don't, you know, but,
No, I remember, and it was a lot of fun.
Oh, and you made me feel like I actually contributed. That was amazing.
You did contribute. You did contribute, man. Why do you think I asked you? You're a great writer.
It was a lot of fun, and you really make the process fun. It's, how do you find that balance, Jordan, between, because obviously it's serious business when you're creating. You know, that's as serious as it gets for us, but you do not take yourself incredibly seriously. And I mean that as a great compliment, by the way.
Right. No. And you know what? We all artists do on occasion. And I fall into that trap sometimes. Absolutely. Certainly. I'll take myself too seriously and start looking at sales numbers or who's buying or who's not buying the latest album or whatever. It's a trap we all fall into because we make stuff because we want people to enjoy it, you know, and which is, it's good. And I think God made us to be creative. You know, he made us in his image. He's obviously creative. So I'm all for that. But the trap is that, and this is for every artist, content creator, you know, in any field, is that I get my value or joy out of, you know, whether people validate my art or not. And that can't be that.
Right.
I get my joy and my identity just from being loved by God. Because of that, I know I'm so loved by God. I know I'm so loved by Jesus that if, you know, somebody writes 80% of the song and I write 20% of the song, I don't care. I just want the song to be great. If people don't even remember that I was a co-writer in the room or that I started the song with the hook, I don't care. As long as the song moves people, you know, that's what I'm concerned with, is let it, people can identify with it and it makes an impact. And now, especially like Christian music, if it brings people closer to Jesus, that's what I'm all about.
It's a crazy, wacky comedy of national importance. Two ex-presidents sharing an apartment and going to cooking school to see if they have what it takes. So let the hijinks and shenanigans ensue. Bill Clinton and George W. Bush star in Hail to the Chef. Hey, Bill, what have you done with my spices? I have had no contact with that woman, Mrs. Dash. There's no way you'll veto these former heads of state. Hey, W, you know what my favorite fruit dessert is?
What? Impeachment pie?
Get ready to issue an executive order. You must watch this show.
Just finished my quiche. Mission accomplished.
I may have to declare this kitchen a major disaster area. The New York Times says it's laugh inwardly with no sound funny. Variety magazine says this comedy deserves its own pardon. George, don't forget to put cinnamon in those scrambled eggs.
Fool me once. Shame on me or you or something like that. pass on the laughter, and bon appetit. It's Hail to the Chef.
Just in case anyone's wondering, I did not kill myself.
Now airing on C-SPAN Plus.
Well, and there is always that moment when we create something that it leaves the studio, it leaves the space of our head, and now it's on display for people. So whether it's a song that you're debuting in church, kind of walk me through that, when whether it's you leading it or someone else leading it, which would be more likely right now probably. So what's going through your head when that song is being introduced to your congregation for the first time?
Okay, so this is funny you ask this, because I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think you know, see, you can ask this question because as a content creator yourself, you know that feeling.
Yeah.
Are people about to like this or not?
Right.
And I remember plenty of times when I think, this is my best song I've ever written. Right. And I sing it and people are looking at me like I'm sitting up there just passing gas. I mean, they're looking at me like, I don't even know what you're singing about. I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm not connecting, you know? Mm. And then I've had other songs where I'm like, this song's okay, I'll give it a try. And everybody, like, tears, and they're on their knees and they're coming up to me afterwards. They're like, God met me in a way I've never known before. And I'm like, were you in the same room? That was G to C for like 5 minutes. Like, there was no,
yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I think that's just God's grace and God's way of sometimes, I don't know, humbling us and keeping it about him, is because sometimes when I think I have like the most creative line in that verse two or that bridge or whatever, and then there's other times when I think the song is okay and everybody says, that's your hit, that's the song, you know, and that moved me and God met me in that song or whatever. So you just never know.
Yeah, there are just so many stories like that, especially in music. You'll hear an artist who just, it's almost a throwaway track on an album that ends up blowing up. And
yep.
There's just no accounting for that. You know, so for you, on the ones that you feel like aren't received as well, do you just sort of file that under, well, maybe that was just for me?
Or, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I do one of two things with it. I realize, okay, that was just a me and Jesus song, and, you know, or whatever. Or there's sometimes when I see it's a hit and I give it to someone else who's going to make it even a better hit.
Okay.
So let me give an example of that. So there's this song called You Never Let Me Go. And I remember I wrote it at 1 or 2 in the morning. I mean, it was like the darkest time of my life. My wife was going through something called postpartum depression. And it was just awful. I mean, nobody was sleeping. She wasn't working. It was just bad. And I remember coming down the studio and I wrote this song called You Never Let Me Go. Well, there is a power on it. We sang it at church. It went great. But when I met this artist named Julia, she just has this amazing, powerful kind of pop voice. And she was not much of a writer. She had ideas, but not, you know, not a musician and so forth. So it's funny because, you know, how you talked about collaboration. There is a struggle, right? Like, do I give my song?
Yeah.
Do I give my song to her?
Right.
And I totally had that thought, and I've had it many times, but here's what I think. If that artist is able to take this song a couple steps further than I could take it, then I need to let it go. And so I remember when this, actually, funny story. Can I tell you a funny story? How, like, this kind of came about?
Yeah.
All right. You're not going to believe this. I walk into church one day as a worship leader. Let's back up about 2 years before I wrote this song, maybe 3 years. I am about, I don't know, 30 years old, maybe 28, I don't know. And I walk in the sound booth. This is right before I go to lead worship on a Sunday morning, okay? And my tech guy, he goes, out of nowhere, Matt, service starts at 10:30. This is like 10:29.
Okay. Yeah. That's when the magic happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want you to imagine, you know how all tech guys, right? Like,
sure.
Like their social skills are usually like a computer, you know, just fact in, fact out.
Sure.
And he's like, so you're a really good songwriter, but you're really not a good singer. I just want you to know, if you gave your songs to other people, that's really the idea. I wanted to punch him in the face.
Someone did not read your book, Truth and Love. Yeah. So
no, I was like, no, it was just truth. It was truth.
It's all truth, no love. Yeah.
All truth, no love. But here's the thing. I was offended. My feelings were hurt.
Sure.
And then here's the thing, though. I thought about it for about a month. I'm like, what if he's right? Hmm. And I started giving my songs away to everybody. I suddenly found so much joy in watching other people succeed with my songs that, I mean, it puts a big fat smile on my face to talk about it. So that song in particular, Julia, so now fast forward a little bit. When I thought of that, I often go back to that moment in that sound booth with John. And he was right. Now, most tech guys, like, you know, could have said it differently, but that's okay. The point is, he was right. And so that song, she has texted me a few times and said, Jordan, I just got another standing ovation with you when I sang You Never Let Me Go. And and here, I'm not even there. Like, wow. I'm on the couch with my kids, and she's texting me going, God just moved in this powerful way when I sang your song, You've Never Let Me Go. And so now I'm so glad that I gave her that song. And really, any time I've given a song to one of my artists, I find such joy in seeing them succeed with that song. Like, I'm happy in my lane. I'm a songwriter and a producer. And if I can help them succeed and them write a better song, I get so much joy in that.
Well, I mean, you're a good singer, by the way. So,
I appreciate you saying that, but I know the truth. And here's the thing. You know, I took a John Maxwell quiz one time.
Okay.
And sent it to 20 people, did what he said, and he said, have them rate you like 1 through 5, and all of them put singing at the bottom and songwriting at the top. And I'm like, dang it, John was right.
Wow. Well, I think it's just because you're so good at so many things that it's hard to, anything that's still like your last place is still going to be most people's first or second. There's never time to create, and you have to make time.
Oh, totally.
So how do you do that?
Barely right now. So when I became pastor, I told them, I said, hey guys, I have been in the studio for 2 to 3 days a week. I was at church 2 days a week, Monday and Tuesday, and obviously Sunday. And I would tend to spend Wednesday through Friday at home, and it depend on the week, obviously. That was happening for years, but when I became pastor, I told the board, I said, I'm only going to give you guys one condition. I have to have a day for just me making music, because if I don't make music, it'd be like telling a dog not to bark. That's how I worded it. And I said, look, it's going to be really good for my soul, and I think every pastor needs time just for himself. And they all agreed, and they let me do that. And so, honestly, every Friday, my wife gets home from the hospital about 10:45, and I just have 10:45 until about 5 p.m., and that's really it. Now, there are Saturdays where I'll have, like, a two-hour session or a four-hour session. My wife's been really gracious about that. But right now, the last 2 years, it's literally been either middle of the night with an idea or Friday between 11 and 5.
And you just have to make it happen. It's nothing, right? There's no muse here, right? There's no,
magical,
no.
You know, it's very just roll your sleeves up and grind it out kind of stuff.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, there's still the occasional, like, idea in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
But I will say my writing has definitely slowed down the last 2 years just because of the season of life. I'm trying to think how to say it. I'm more, like, efficient with it now.
Mm-hmm.
So now if I have an idea, like, I can come down and track it. And, you know, 2 hours later, it's, like, pretty darn close to done. Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, it would have taken 2 weeks, you know.
Okay. And that just comes with experience, I'm sure. It's just...
Exactly. That's like any profession, the more you do it, you know.
Right, right. So you have so many things available. I know you do. You have your own home recording studio, and you call that The Cellar, correct?
Right.
And and you have a number of artists that you produce. Where can people go to hear them?
Sure. They can go to innoverecords.com.
Okay.
And I've got a new artist named Andrew Slater. I'm especially excited about because his album is out here in a few weeks. But innoverecords.com. And then The Cellar Records is a subdivision of the label. It's just regular music, you know, songs about love or love lost or whatever. And those are a lot of fun, but I spend most of my time with Innovate Records.
Okay. And you've also done some writing. We haven't had a chance to talk about that at all, but I know you have like a book you published, and you mentioned you have an ebook that's available as well.
Yeah. So I released this ebook here, maybe 2 years ago, called The Hook, What Preachers Can Learn from Songwriters. And because it came about like by accident, I have these two documents on my desktop, one called Song Start, one called Sermon Start. And I went to write a sermon and I accidentally clicked Song Start. And so I was like, I'll just write this sermon like a song. So I came up with my hook, my verse, created the problem and my chorus. I was like, this is my summary. I create another problem with the verse, came back to my chorus twice, bridge, chorus, hook, out. And suddenly I remember I was just an experiment. And that was the message that so many people came up and said, that was such a good message, like way more than usual. And I was like, wow, wouldn't you know it? I used a song structure for a sermon. And so that was fun. So I thought, you know what, maybe this is worth sharing. So I called The Hook, little ebook. And then The Seventh Theory is a book for people to learn how to play guitar or piano.
Yeah, and it's not just in a church setting, but it was written primarily for church musicians, correct?
Correct. People who want to play any song that they want to play without charts it empowers the team to be more spontaneous without needing a bunch of lead sheets on their music stands.
And where can people find those materials at?
The7theory.com, and also Amazon has a DVD series. And, you know how this podcast is all about, like, creating stuff, creating content?
Mm-hmm.
That has been hands down the thing I created that surprised me the most. Hands down.
Okay.
Because I thought, you know, I'll spend a month or two making this and hopefully it helps a couple people. And now there's three or four universities using it.
Wow.
I take it to conferences and I just love it. It's so cool seeing people learn the number system.
So folks, a lot of great material there that I hope you'll avail yourself to. And you still have your jordanbeal.com website available as well. There's like general stuff because I know you're still available sometimes with a band to travel and minister. So you definitely can't go wrong doing that. Jordan Beal, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Matt. I just appreciate you so much as a friend, and I think this podcast is amazing.
Thanks, bud.
Yeah, man.
And we appreciate you being a part of the Mattcast. Our music is by Sound of Fusion. We hope to see you again soon. This has been a production of Monumental Ministries. For more info, go to mattministry.com. Hey, thanks for having me over. I had a wonderful time.